TFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Visit www.CapturedPrey.com for all your import, transformers, and third-party figure needs. And save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. CapturedPrey.com. Mega Toy Fan. Look for Mega Toy Fan at popular toy conventions like BotCon and TFCon, as well as on Facebook at facebook.com/mega.toyfan.
Stars that came here to Earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe. Robotic warriors.
Perceptor here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. And now, without further ado, here is Weird Wolf. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop?
Hello, everyone.
LP is sponsored by.
Well, it's playing again.
CapturedPrey.com.
live broadcasting, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone, welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 141, recorded February 13th, Friday the 13th, 2015, the day before Toy Fair in New York. A lot of excitement around that, and I know I can't wait. Along with me this evening is Headmaster Don.
Hey, everybody.
Tobias Grunvall from Sweden.
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Heng Yip Chan from the great Australian continent.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yes. He's in the future. He is in the
future. Yeah, me as well.
Oh, yes. You yes. are in the future. Yes. It's already in the morning. And also with us is Sideburn 2, a.k.a. Michael Swift from sunny Florida. Well, it's not sunny right now.
Nighttime Florida.
Yeah. And joining us this evening is our very special guest, Mr. Aaron Archer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tonight we're going to be talking about the Unicron trilogy. If you're not familiar with that terminology, it's kind of a fan, I guess, assigned name to the Armada, Energon, and Cybertron trilogy of toy lines from when did it begin? 2003, through I believe 2006, and we kind of allot that name because I guess Unicron was like the main guy that was the main antagonist in it, and a lot of great toys and a lot of great storylines came from that. A lot of current fans that are young, a lot younger. I know Cyburn too. It's right in your demographic, and I believe you too, aren't you, Heng? Didn't you grow up with Superlink?
I didn't grow up with that set of Transformers, but when I got to Australia, was when Armada started. And it was really the only time where I think they had proper distribution of Transformer toys in Australia.
Mm. But that's pretty much. We are echoing somewhere. Okay. But anyway, that's pretty much the backstory of what the Unicron trilogy is. We'll be talking a little bit about that. We may a little bit later, if we have time, we're going to be talking about Toy Fair. And I also want to point people to our social media outlets, Facebook, our Facebook group. We have Twitter at TFYLP. You can tweet us at TFYLP. We're on Tumblr, all kinds of places. I know Suede66, Mike Lyons, he is monitoring those and he may be able to answer any questions. And I have my phone muted, so if he tries to text me, I can't see it. But I will try to check up from time to time myself and answer any questions. If you have any questions for Mr. Archer, please feel free to post them. And if we see them during the show, we may pose them. And if we can't get to your questions, I'm sure we can get them to him at a later date. And if he can, have him answer those at a later date. So Archer, Mr. Archer, tell us what you're doing right now.
I've spent the last year and a half, pretty much as I've said, in other venues, just learning to draw and being a family man. When I say learning to draw, getting back into that, and I gotten away from it, so I've been enjoying that. Developing some projects, helping people like Rick out, freelance, that kind of thing. That's what I've been doing, low key.
Awesome. So you're helping out Rick now with Play With This too?
Yeah, yeah. Some professional advice, some art contributions, you know, general support, all kinds of things. But we're having a lot of fun with it. He's really hustling it, and it's looking really nice.
Awesome. Is there anything specific that you have designed? I know you did some headshots, didn't you?
Yeah, I did some headshots, and you know, I'm looking forward to some of the lore bits to come out as the Kickstarter goes on, some of the bio things. Mm-hmm. That's some of the more fun stuff. Once the bios hit, it makes sense, some of the artwork that's been out there. So I really don't want to say too much yet.
Can't give away too much, no.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start talking about the Unicron trilogy, and I guess we'll lead off talking about the history that led up, what you can fill in from now. Well, I guess before we do that, tell us what your job was at Hasbro.
At the beginning, or when I encountered, when I started.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, go from the beginning and then how you got into Transformers and
I started in 95 on the Batman line, which was a big line for Kenner. The animated series Batman Forever had just come out. So they were doing well. I was part of the Batman Dark Knight Returns figures and the Total Justice figures, stuff like that, Aliens Resurrection. And then as Kenner was moving to Rhode Island in around 2000, I kind of volunteered to take Transformers, and they took me up on it because the guy who had been working on it, managing it, wasn't going. So it was just fortunate that I asked for that kind of gig. I'd been doing a lot of licensing work with Warner Brothers and 20th Century Fox and DC Comics through the Batman and Aliens things, even some Star Wars Lucasfilm stuff. So the relationship with Takara being so important, it made sense that someone who had spent time with licensing relationships cultivated or continued to cultivate that Takara relationship, albeit from the design side. So that's how I came to Transformers. Lucky guy at the right place, I guess. And that's how that started, and I was in design. So that represented the visual look, the feature, working with marketing, sometimes names and stories. But
so you had a good connection on pretty much every level of the every aspect of the design of the toys, from not just the design of the toys, but how they kind of were marketed, and I guess the story behind each character.
Yeah, that's with the brand that a toy company manages on their own versus the license. It takes a lot more care to, you know, make sure you don't do damage to the characters and brand. So the design, you have to go a little deeper than just putting out the next figure, the lead figure. You have to think about it, because that'll represent, you know, Hasbro's asset more so than another licensee's asset.
As opposed to like DC with Batman and
you have a licensor to tell you, hey, you've gone too far, you know, and that's not right. That's not our character anymore. You know, bring it back to where we recognize him. Okay, that's good guidance. When you're running your own enterprise, you have to be really planned and cooperative to make sure that you don't do something that you don't have that babysitter of the licensor.
Yeah,
keeping you in line. I'm sure there's a lot of fans that would agree disagree there that they wish I had an editor.
Yeah. So as you got into the Transformers brand, now Armada came right after, here in the United States, it came right after Robots in Disguise, which is an import of the Car Robots line, which followed up the, I guess, you know, nowadays, Beast Machines is kind of, you know, there's the fans are more vocal now, but back in the day, I remember Beast Machines, the fans were quite polarized on the brand. The show was a lot darker than a lot of fans were familiar with, and then then we got the Robots in Disguise line, which was the cartoon was an import of Robots.
I worked on all those toys as well, importing.
So, and it was obviously more lighthearted, I guess, the cartoon, which I believe was produced by Saban Entertainment.
They ended up with it, yeah.
Yeah, which is sad because I really liked it. I've got some of the toys over here in the corner, and there's some really great molds there. But Armada was a different change, was a kind of a change in direction of the brand. Following Car Robots / Robots in Disguise, which it's been well documented that Robots in Disguise was meant to be a filler line until Armada came out, and whereas the Transtech was scrapped.
Yeah.
So can you tell us anything about Transtech at all?
Yeah, so how you always work with the idea of success in mind. You're optimistic that the plans will work out. So when the Beast Machines plan started failing, as you said, too dark, they changed the essence of transformation, you know, being more of a spiritual event. You know, it wasn't, Transtech was the next series that took off after Beast Machines. And then once Beast Machines started to fail, the successor no longer had a home and was tied to the failure that Beast Machines was. So I've never really said that publicly, but that's why it disappeared, because it's lumped in with the Hasbro mindset that, well, this is a failing idea. Let's get rid of all of it. What do we do? What do we have? Well, we can import this series from Takara that they've made toys for, that they have a cartoon for. We can get that placed. Let's put that out for a year while we figure out what we're going to do. I was part of that team figuring out what we were going to do.
And there was some great filler that was plugged into the Car Robots line.
So there's there's late model Beast Machines items that didn't come out, that came out in new deco at least, or in some cases original.
Megabolt Megatron.
Yeah, Battle Unicorn came out again, and the three-headed dog. Forget his name.
Cerberus, I believe. Yeah, Bruticus, but it was
Bruticus, yeah. So, you know, yeah, there were some of that stuff. And then we had models of the Transtech stuff, you know, around, but that never really survived and go very far.
I think the closest...
That's a shame, though. Sorry, that's a shame, though, because quite... some of the Transtech stuff I've seen, that looks really good. Like the designs are really stylish.
Yeah, it had a sweet style. The designer on that stuff, a couple of those guys that worked on the Kenner side were really cool design type guys, future forward anime fans. And it is a shame. And some of the models that I've seen are really, they are really nice products.
Well, I believe the club put out a redeco of the animated Blur as Transtech Cheetor. And from what I've heard, wasn't a lot of the animated Blur, wasn't some of the design cues for that toy taken directly from the original Transtech design?
Probably, yeah. We always looked at them. We always had them. I mean, I don't want to say always had them around, but they were around. And, you know, when we were looking to be inspired, that was one of dozens of things we'd always kind of pull out to continue to be inspired from. You know, so it did its job. I mean, you run into that. I always say, too, that the Transformers is fortunate that it keeps going. You know, every year there's something new. Most toy lines die along the road, you know, and Beast Machines just didn't work out. Transtech is just that sad carcass there that could have been something.
Yeah. Now the with Transtech being shoved to the side, and we brought and RID was brought in, and like I said, there were some great things in there. You know, like some molds that even today on the secondhand market fetch really decent prices. For example, Scourge, which I believe he kicked off the Black Optimus Prime Nemesis.
Yeah, I think yeah.
And yeah, that was like a gorgeous redeco of G2 Laser Prime. I mean, that was just phenomenal. And then we had I was trying to remember what else was added to that line. Well, of course, the return of the G1 mold with the Combaticons. You know, those I know as a fan that was I started coming in around the as an adult collector around the time that Beast Wars had gone to Fox Kids and Beast Machines was starting to air on Saturdays, and I was starting to get back into the fandom, and I'd rediscovered my original G1s. And then Robots in Disguise came out, and here was the original G1 molds that I remembered. And I have to say, I think those is what totally sucked me in 100%. I got to get all this stuff. And was there any, since their design aesthetic was different, do you recall if there was any, hesitation? Yeah.
No, they were part of the line. All that stuff was part of the line. If it was in the show, you know, it was more important at that point than anything. The tricky thing for that one was just deco. It was weird to deco an item that had been colored that many times already.
Yeah. Well, The thing is that that by that time the mold degradation was starting to show its true colors on that, because
it stopped working.
Yeah, but one thing, and I know a lot of G1 collectors are still probably scratching their head. I know I am, and I don't know if it's ever been asked at a previous convention or anything, but since the molds were obviously available with the Combaticons, do you recall, was there ever any talk of putting out a reissue gift set of the G1 colors as Bruticus?
No. I mean, at that time, it was still like the TRU or Toys R Us exclusive G1 stuff that came out later.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of put all that, you know, that thinking together. Like a gift box set at that time with the prices that would have had to have in a big box, that would have been scary back in 2002, 2003. I mean, now, you know, you look at some of the Comic-Con boxes and you would laugh at that.
Yeah.
Of course we should have done that. Of course that should have come out. But well, man, especially, I'll tell you, back then it would have been really scary, I think.
Especially with the new Titan-class Devastator that's getting ready to be released. It's like, that is just phenomenal. I mean, my mind's still blown on that. So.
Yeah. No.
But that was always a burning question. It's like, the molds are there. Why don't they just do it? It's like, nobody could ever. I know Insane Galvatron, one of the original guys, Greg Metcalf, whenever we started this show, it might have been the topic of a discussion in one of the very first episodes of the show about 4 years ago. We pondered, you know, well, you know, they were there. Eventually, Takara did do a reissue box set of them.
Yeah, they did.
You know, as far as a domestic release, just nobody could understand why they weren't done. But we've dealt on that too much. Yeah. And before we go into the Armada, birth of Armada, anybody else have any questions regarding
I haven't got a question. I've got more of a comment from Structure. Being one of the older fans here and one of the older fans in general, I started in 84 with the original series, and we were coming out of Beast Machines, and it was I was a little down because of Beast Machines. I didn't want to be. It's just, yes, sir, I am the oldest fan, apparently. But then we got R.I.D.
Oh, it was me.
And I don't know how much you were involved with that, but R.I.D. really, it kind of doomed me to not leaving the fandom, because I had imported all the toys from Japan. And then I heard it's like, oh, great, we're getting them in the U.S. And I just imported them home. But I love the line. I love all the add-on figures. Like, we got the recolor Hero Megatron, the Hero Megatron, the Hero Optimus. I'm just going to say thank you. Even though it was a filler line before Armada, whenever you were involved with RID or if you know the people involved, that's one of my favorite lines. I'm just saying thank you for putting a lot of love in that line.
Yeah, they did their best, and we enjoyed it.
Yep. Because I've got every version of the Fire Convoy Optimus Prime mold,
including plenty the black of them.
Yeah, I've got them all.
You've got too much money, Don.
No, I have no wife. I have no life. I have NASA. So, hell,
you've got to stop advertising that.
No, I've got an attack cat who's sleeping in a box.
I like live radio podcasts anyway.
Yeah. Now, Tobias, you or Michael or you, Hane, do you have any questions before we move into the birth of Armada about the, like, Transtech, any of that stuff?
No, not really.
No burning.
Bring on the Armada.
Okay. So can you tell us what you recall about the advent and why you went the direction of Armada?
Yeah, so Hasbro announced that they were moving to Kenner office, which was in Cincinnati, Ohio, to the home office in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, in September of 2000. And multiple people, dozens of people, were given the opportunity to relocate. Like I said, the guy that was previously on Transformers didn't want to relocate. I did. I asked for Transformers, and I got it. So I started working on Transformers probably in October of 2000, November 2000, in anticipation of moving to Rhode Island in ultimately February. And that is when I was given the assignment of coming up with a collectible line of Transformers. When they say collectible, at that point they meant low cost, consumable. You know, I often say popcorn. You gotta have it kind of purchases. You know, today minifigures from Lego would be that kind of purchase. And that became the Minicons. I was given the goal of how do we, you know, create a collectible line around little. Takara had presented the MicroMaster concept again. To Hasbro. Hasbro wanted something a little more robust than that, blended those ideas and the collectability need, and that's how kind of the Minicons were born and how they started to then interact with larger Transformers as a feature concept. That was all done at the end of 2000. So I will say one thing. I never had as much development time on anything ever as I had on Season 1 of Armada, wave 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of Armada. Because of that stopgap of RID, I had like a year and a half development. And when I say I, that's a giant team behind that I. But and that's what made Armada kind of fun, because we investigated concepts. And that's how a lot of that funky stuff that with the Minicon activation ultimately kind of manifests itself, and building swords out of airplanes and stuff like that.
Which some of those actually were really great gimmicks, but at the same time, and if Armada has a huge knock against it, some of the toys were kind of hampered by the gimmicks that
they were
interactivity.
Yeah, I'll take you back in time again to the kid toy market. You know, the Batman toys were still hot. They all came with projectiles and doodads that made him climb and whatnot. That was also true of other figure lines at that time, had that kind of action capability. And that's what I was known for. I came from those kinds of teams. I did those kind of projects on Star Wars, some of the mini tank kind of things that really weren't in the movie, but were more about the play. So they wanted that kind of development brought to Transformers. So that was an active goal. It wasn't about replica cars made into a beautiful puzzle as much as it was, how do we get kids playing with these figures in a crazy way.
And it came through, I mean, because I'm probably I don't know if I'm the only one that's young enough here to have been. I was in, like, my early preteens or my early teens, just, you know, barely on the cusp of teenager at that time. So I was still playing with toys, and I hadn't had so much fun with toys than in the Armada line since Beast Wars. RAD was a lot of complicated figures, so... I would get frustrated so fast with them. It took too long to play with them, took too long to transform and stuff like that. But I had gotten fortunate one Christmas to get pretty much the entire first run of the Armada figures. And I had humongous battles, you know, on the floor with my brother, with our toys, and it was easy to play with them. They were very easy to transform. They were very, very fun. As an adult collector, they sort of grained on me a little bit, but as a kid, when I was that target audience at the time, they were fantastic to play with.
I talk about this sometimes too on various robot stump speeches I make. We had no idea that there was a collector fan base out there that would be, I don't know, that would care, you know? Honestly, 1984 was a long time ago in Hasbro years. So it was 1987, for that matter. So it was 1995 when we were doing this. So, which were all the big years for different Transformer eras. And we didn't know what we needed to be precious about at that time. So clearly names we were not precious about. We put Bruticus on a dog, and you sideswipe weirdly at times and all that kind of stuff. So that's one thing I look at now from what we did in those early days, was we didn't respect that there was something to respect. I'll say it that way. So it's interesting that you say that. As a fan now, I look back at him too, and I kind of go, well, you know, I could see why I wouldn't like them now as just a fan of toys. But as a kid, I still stand by them wholeheartedly.
Oh, yeah. Tons of fun. I mean,
Scavenger, the green bulldozer. Scavenger?
Yeah.
I mean, that was probably my most fun toy, making a Godzilla basically out of a beam shovel thing.
Oh, go ahead.
It's a shame about Hotshot, the American name is Hotshot, I'm quite sure, that the prototype was so different from the final product that we got.
Yeah, no, totally.
It wasn't a great toy, sadly.
And I liked it.
I don't know what happened to that prototype, to be honest with you. There's a middle, from my recollection, there's a middle prototype. So there's the prototype people seen pictures of, and then there's the toy that's come out. But they're somewhere in the middle. Two, that would have also been a cool toy. that kind of explains how it got from where it was to there. But first waves are always tough because so much rides on the first wave, and it's when you don't really know what you need to know yet about what people are going to respond to and what's working and what's not working and what's too much kibble, what's not enough kibble. Is there ever not enough kibble?
I'm a Beach Wars fan, so no.
Not according to Beach Wars. You look at, what is it, Big Convoy. It literally can form his own like mammoth mode with just a kibble.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous.
But it's an awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, that's where we were.
Mr. Archer, one thing about the Armada cartoon was the constant getting the names wrong, which from a selling standpoint, it's like our main vehicle for this product line is getting the names all wrong. Did y'all ever tell the animation studio to try better? I'm not going to say try harder, because we know what happened the last time someone shouted try harder at somebody from Hasbro.
The animation studio had nothing to do with it. There was we had a separate group that translated. It got complicated because the Japanese names were paired against the U.S. or Hasbro Global name. And sometimes they would shift. And we had working names sometimes, so lists would change. You guys have all heard and seen the legality issues when we get certain names used or not. And unfortunately, from what I remember too, is those were getting delivered literally within the minimal limit that you can provide them to the network. They were aired in pretty much the order that they got them done, as fast as they could get them done.
Oh yeah, because I mean,
they didn't have time to gut check it, you know, and then name check, you know, which is unfortunate.
The cells in the show were not finished at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I've looked at the comparisons between the Takara show that edits and changes scenery and does some cooler things to explain scenes. They had time to romance that because they saw that it didn't look good, you know. But that's the perils. We went first on Armada before Takara, so they could benefit on that one from us leading the way. And then it flipped for each other one for them.
I want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Dust Mites on Instagram. I want to thank you for listening. And also, I have a question on Facebook from one of our listeners, Jason Tate. He has a comment first, and he says, if y'all want questions for Aaron, I'd like to know if Tidal Wave was your idea, and if so, how pleased with you with him was you? How pleased was with him how he turned out? I'm trying to reword it to where it would make sense.
Don't just paraphrase it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dig that toy. He was the Devastator of Armada. So I guess, you know, did you do Tidal Wave, and were you pleased with how he turned out?
Yeah, you know, that one was a joint effort between me and Eric Siebenhaler. And I love Tidal Wave because I love the oddball Transformers, in spite of my public outcry that I do not like Skylynx. But I do like the weird ones, and if you think about that guy, there's not another Transformer that is three parts that have to be put together to form a big robot that those individual parts don't have a robot form. It kind of breaks the rules for a Transformer a little bit, and that's what made that guy fun. So Eric and I did different parts of it. I think I did the head. Eric did a lot of the vehicle mode. And by that vehicle mode, define the body then. We had fun with it.
Yeah, I have to admit, Tidal Wave as a toy was, as a collector, one of those toys that really hit the mark for me. I love Tidal Wave. I know a lot of fans and collectors are going to facepalm with this, but I happen to like Hotshot. I mean, yeah, he had no neck, and he was just, you know, like that. But he was a fun little toy, you know, to mess with. And you know, in his Minicon, what was his name?
Jolt.
Yes. Aside from being back heavy, his design was kind of cool too, in my opinion. Now,
that was fun for Armada. I mean, we really had to design two robots for every package, if not more.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that will also, I mean, for the names issue, I mean, there were dozens and dozens of, you know, Minicons, as everybody knows. I mean, there's a lot of work that is, it doubled the work. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of great Minicons. Go ahead.
Aaron, do you actually feel like the Minicons was actually the next future for Transformers past its normal transforming gimmick? Because in your 2003 interview, you said that with that.
They're still around. They're kind of still made. I think if I could modify that now, I'd say there's always going to be a small Transformer available, whether it's a Minicon or a Legends figure or a Creo figure. And that is true.
Did you ever expect it to get that popular, though?
The Minicons themselves?
Yeah.
No. I mean, it really touched me when I saw some of the Minicon displays over at several BotCons, and I'm like, wow. This is a whole collecting community in itself, if it wants to be. And, it was nice that was accepted that way.
Tobias, you were starting to ask a question a moment ago. What's that?
Yeah, I just said, I think it's a really good concept with the Minicons. Once upon a time, I had a lot of Armada toys, but I sold them off, and I actually kept Tidal Wave and Megatron and all the Minicons because they are my favorites.
Yeah.
So my question to Aaron is, did you design Megatron as well? And I mean that Giga toy.
The tech, those early days, so I went, I'll further the story, in what would be the summer of 2001 and 2, I went to Japan and would stay for several weeks. And we created this kind of ongoing creative relationship where they would kind of lay down some technical drawings. I would draw on top, and that's in some of those magazines. And then other times we would draw things, and then they would kind of create a model around it. So Megatron was one of those ones that I would say I veneered. We definitely talked about the features we wanted, but like the details on that are, you know, quote unquote sculpted, those are my drawings, my input. So yeah,
okay.
And that's why I like that figure the most from the line. So
yeah, and the name for Leader One, was that your idea?
I knew enough to be kind of sassy and kind of dumb. So I knew the GoBot thing would be funny. So it was available, so we used it. At one point, the planet that Unicron had was going to be called Gobatron.
I remember reading about that. I wish that had been available.
Yeah.
That would have been great, though, calling it Gobatron.
Yeah, I think at the time... I mean, we trademarked the name, which is available if it's not being used at the moment. So I think we didn't want to poke the bear at that point, though. We didn't want to have Bandai or anybody ticked off. So we just said, you know, let's leave that one, I think, ultimately. Yeah. I don't know why we would have felt that way, but at the time, I think we did.
Okay. Before we move on to Energon... I guess a good question would be to ask, in your opinion, what were the biggest successes and failures of the Armada line?
Well, Armada, whether you guys were already in it or mostly in it, whether it was good or bad or whatever, it brought a lot more eyeballs, and definitely those kid features brought a lot more market share for the Transformers line to kids, you know, from kids. And that kind of certainly helped my career when we took a brand that in management's eyes was not doing what it needed to do through Beast Machines and then come out with this thing through the group and it be successful and uptick the brand in both sales and recognition and licensing support, all of it. You know, it was the start of something that ultimately, you know, a couple years down the road led to the things like the movie and the studio and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So Armada really, if it didn't succeed, I don't know what would have happened. But Hasbro put a lot of chips on the table to make sure it didn't fail.
Now, I mean, as far as toys, now, me personally, like the Super Base Optimus Prime, I loved the cab. Yeah, I loved the cab, but I hated that combined mode. It would never stay together.
Yeah. I think if you look at that, I mean, it shows that we were, like, taking a lot of risks. I mean, that Optimus is a lot of – when it works, it's really interesting and kind of a unique Transformer. When it doesn't work or doesn't look as good as you want it to look, it's kind of a pain in the butt. You know, I'll cop to that. That's true. But we were trying things, you know, like the scavenger with the stomping, weird rolling feet, and again, the
Minicons. I love that though. Like he has deposable. Like he's a brick, and I'll give him that. But
oh, he's
his transformation's easy. His transformation's easy. He has one of the best Minicons, I think. And yeah. I really loved that I could just roll him across the like the ground and be just randomly stomping.
My,
it's like,
my
oh,
favorite
yeah, he's walking.
When you roll him backwards, he does the moonwalk.
Yeah. You know, that toy was a lot of fun as a kid because I don't know what it is about working treads, but as a kid, working treads are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then being able to put his Minicon in him to drive him was just it hit the mark as a kid at the time, you know.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun, and you know, I wish maybe we would have stuck with that idea. I think we got pretty we got into it maybe a little too much. After that, we kind of started building our favorite characters into every line and all that kind of stuff after that. But Armada was a little free and fun.
Well, everyone mentioned their favorite Armada character. I think mine was Jetfire. Really?
Yeah.
Jeff, he just had a great-looking show mode, and he was clean in the rough mode. And I think his combination with Prime was a little more solid than the super mode. But, you know, It's just I just the only thing about Armada that I had a problem with, it just seemed like some of the toys sort of lost a little bit of features for the Minicon.
Well, the feature, yeah, the Minicon was the feature, really, if you think of it that way.
Yeah.
But the Jetfire was probably, for me, was the best toy of Armada.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was the often underrated Demolisher. That toy was amazing.
Well, these guys, well, the original version of these guys were pretty awesome, too. I mean, this is an improvement over that toy, in my opinion. The Generations, for those of you who are listening on the audio download, the Generations version of Armada Starscream. The direction you guys went with all of those guys, Skywarp with the different head and the head crest. I mean, I really got a kick out of those.
Again, you know, I'm glad I didn't, you know, I was a fan of Transformers when I was growing up, but I didn't, it wasn't a religion to me. You know, I remembered fondly the brand, but I didn't remember the details of the brand. I'll admit to that. So when you talk about certain names and things, it's in the head crest, you know, like Skywarp would never have that once I kind of became a fanboy myself a little bit. But it was fun then to be free to do that. I wish we would have kept that idea a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of going off what Don was saying there, how Jetfire combined with Prime, let's kind of segue into Transformers Energon, the series that followed Transformers Armada. And fans, and I fully admit I was one of them, the pants and shirts.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. The pants and shirts idea. Tell us about the genesis of Energon and how you guys plan to execute it.
So, like any success, you want to follow it up, and you want to follow the same battle plan as best you can, because you think that's going to work again. So if Minicons plugged into guys to make a feature happen, what's the next version of that? So we came up with, you know, this new way of combining and telling a story that way. And we also had models and stuff with this extra mode. And so we divided that idea up and said the bad guys would have a third mode and the good guys would combine. And that would be the marketable feature, quote-unquote gimmick, for Energon. And it'll work just like Armada, and it'll be great. And, it, you know, the cartoon was not as strong at all, and that's saying something. And the toys, some of them are cool, some of them are not. I bet the Decepticons are more on the favorite side than any of the Autobots. And
it had some of the coolest repaints of the Armada toys that I love the Energon redeco of Tidal Wave Unicron, Energon Unicron with the translucent greens and the blacks. It was really, really nice. Really great.
Ultra Magnus Overload.
Yes. Yeah.
When you find
It's a shame too, because I think the designs were quite good for most of the toys for Energon. Yeah, I'm gonna stick with English naming conventions, I think. But I have a hard time because I've only ever watched Superling, so everyone's talking to me about Energon and I just blank out because I have no idea what they're talking.
Well, you need your Destrons and your Cybertronians.
It's just funny. No, seriously, I watched all three of the series in Japanese, so it's like, oh yeah. I'm sure I'll get this episode somehow. But I mean, I guess the cartoon was what failed Energon in that sense, that the toys themselves were fine. Like, you do the whole upper body, lower body combination stuff.
Yeah,
for a child to imagine it, it'd be great.
It didn't play out in the show the way the line was set up. I mean, the line, clearly, everything combines. In the show, you barely see much combination, and certainly not the variety of combination there could have been. You know, the animation, it was a lot to animate. I think it was a lot of effort for the animation partner to try to make all that work. That was a big ask. So that failed the show as a result, but I'm not going to pin that on the animation company. That was a lot of effort to have extra modes for every character, upper and lower.
Nah, it's all right. You can pin it on him just a little bit because in the later episodes, they went and did some cell animation to
find it. It was brilliant. It was gorgeous.
Oh, the cell animation. Yes, it was. It was. If they would have done the whole series like that, it would have been amazing. It was beautiful.
But consistency is hard too with that kind of animation. If you look at Armada, you could tell where they actually put more money in sequences they expected to have to use again, like the combination sequences and that very first episode. Those were really good animation, and then you kind of see it drop pretty
bad.
At the time,
the constant dialogue we would have would be that it's hard to find robot animators in Japan. And the reason is, if you're going to be a good robot animator, you want to work on Gundam. And if you don't work on Gundam, then you give up or something. I don't know. But it was always tough to get a certain level of robot drawn for Transformers that lived up to higher end robot stuff. and just the companies we ended up working with just couldn't that wasn't their style. That wasn't their house style.
Now, that that brings up a question for me. It's we obviously know that Transformers are not just manufactured in Japan. They're, it's like right now, Combiner Wars is manufactured in Vietnam, and there's some that's been made in Korea and China. So obviously, different factories are doing this. I guess what you're saying is that some factories have a harder time interpreting what is intended from the toy, or
This was for the animation.
Okay.
Yeah, just their hand, they had a different style. Yeah.
But, I mean, now as far as the production of the toys, though, is there any problems that you ran into whenever, obviously they have the CAD that they have to go off of that is, I'm sure, sent to them from Japan, from Takara. Now...
Well, Takara makes a 3D model of every product, and every product's still old school molded that way from a model.
Oh, wow.
They do CAD drawings to figure out some engineering forms. They've recently started getting more into that, but most of that's all hand-built models.
That's amazing. Now, the combination of... Like I alluded to earlier, the pants and shirts. I guess did you guys in the offices kind of refer to them that way as well, or what are some concepts that came about that led to that?
Well, I think we were really excited about the idea that, well, first of all, we were inspired by the products that Takara had made outside of the Transformers world, the Gaugaigar,
Yes.
The police. What was the police series?
Jay Decker.
Yeah. I think there was another one with ambulances.
Hang your. You're our resident.
Yeah. No. The ambulance one. Brave. Jay Decker.
Yeah.
Duke Fire. I believe.
Maybe. Yeah. But those products, we had those products around the office, and they had that in Gaugaigar, that really cool sideways combining or top and bottom combining.
Metro docking, yeah.
Yeah, and we thought that was Transformers had always had like arm to body kind of combining. So we really liked the idea of this different way. And so we kind of geeked out on that, quite honestly, thinking that was a new way to combine. And then we, you know, I have a chart somewhere. I don't know if I'll be able to ever find it, but it kind of, I had a different symbol for every character and all the different combinations then that character and all the other characters could permeate. And we got up to like 1,200 something different iterations of just the deluxe characters being Wow. tops and bottoms with all the decos and things. I think I subconsciously wanted to see collectors build that wall, but that's not what happened.
Well, you know, we actually had a two-part episode of the Yusha Brave series here on TFYLP here some time back, and we were talking about how the Brave series influenced Transformers, and I was not aware of the influence that Brave had on Energon, and now that you mention it, I do see that now.
Yeah, we even in Armada as well. Those toys are around to the point where we tried to use those tools at different points along the way, but because they were tied up with another partner of Takara's, they really weren't free and clear to use without extra partnerships. So we just never went that route, but we were always inspired by those products, and particularly for me, the Captain Shark.
Oh, yes.
And you know, with the giant locomotive bazooka gun that would mount to his shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, those were very,
yeah.
Yeah,
okay. Right down here. Yeah. I don't know if you can see them, but yeah. Now, Energon.
I got that cold in my B-Mogs.
Ah, yeah, that would actually fit. I've got a couple B-Mogs up here. I never considered putting them with. I think the orange one would look really good with the Sun Fiber. Now, in Energon, you know, we've kind of, as far as the television show, we've talked about how it didn't live up to expectations. And here on the show, it's been kind of a running joke, actually, Energon has. You know, it's like, well, that's Energon bad. Now, the toys were, there were some great toys, like you said, from Energon. The show kind of fell off. As a corporate entity, did Hasbro look at Energon and say, okay, Armada was a huge success with the kids, but what's happening with Energon?
Great question. It came up right away. These were, you got to remember, for us, it was most American companies do maybe 13 or 24 episode series because we were partnering with Takara. Because of Takara's need for Japanese airs, we did 52 episodes. So these series had to last 18 months. That's a lot of built-in time up front for a toy line, not knowing how it's going to really go. So we knew pretty early things weren't going as well as Armada was or did. There was talk about the package being too dark. The Energon toy package is a black background versus and Armada was really bright and blue and red and kind of spacey. Upbeat spacey, whereas Energon is probably dark, you know.
I actually really, really dig the Energon packaging with the electric lightning bolts and things. But
the lightning bolts, I think, came later, or we brightened them up along the way as one example of brightening that package up.
And also added the red packaging, too, with the super, or was it the power links? Yeah, the power links.
Yeah. Because those were 18-month series, each at a certain point they transitioned to kind of a half-step upgrade. So like the Unicron battles and Armada.
Yeah, when they went Super Saiyan.
Yeah. don't remember where I was going with all of that, but. Where do we start with that question?
I totally lost. Well, before...
the higher-ups. Yeah. Really... So, I mean, even for the Hasbro team, Energon is not the one we talk about or use too many molds from, or it's just kind of disappeared.
Like I said, the Energon didn't live up to expectations, but it still was successful enough. I mean, it didn't kill off the brand. I mean,
no, it maintained the brand. I think, you know, business people, you know, they want growth every year and they want that percentage of growth to be consistent. And, you know, we kind of had a dip, you know, it was still the low of Energon was still higher than Beast Wars ever was. So we were still above, you know, above that barometer, but it wasn't going up, and that was probably the more of the issue at the time.
Now, I want to remind listeners, we are watching the Twitter feed, and I'm watching Facebook here on my iPad. So if you have any questions for Mr. Archer, please feel free to ask. Let's go into, I know you're probably getting short on time, but let's go into Cybertron now, as lead us out of Energon and into Cybertron.
So again, let's repeat success. Another 18-month cycle. We're going to do another series with Takara Tomy partnership. If the combining didn't work, what are we going to do? You know, now. So we came up with those ideas around that. We tried to brighten it up. We tried to bring little more humor to it. I don't know if that worked, but, you know, tried to make little adjustments, got back to more, in some cases, fun toys, that you didn't need to think, you didn't think you had to have a whole system around, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know one of the biggest knocks attending some of the conventions that around the television shows themselves, the biggest complaint was that, well, the cartoons themselves were made for the Eastern market.
Yeah.
Initially, and then imported here to the West in the United States and translated. So the original stories were written for Asian market, and sometimes they didn't quite mesh well over here because cultural differences and references that we just didn't get. The translations didn't come through, and I know I've got the entire Cybertron series on DVD. And while I love the animation style, I really dig the combination of CG and animation. The story is kind of weak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've told you guys heard the story of Supercross yet?
No, I haven't.
So Cybertron is kind of, you know, a classic kind of, you got to go out and get the magic thing and bring it back before all hell breaks loose kind of storyline. Very much like, you know, Battle of the Planets or something like that. Or Yamato.
Battleship Yamato.
Yeah, you know, we got to go off and get this stuff or some bad stuff will happen here. So we kind of templated that idea. At first, we wanted to go around. The collector buzz was building at that point anyway. And when I say collector buzz, not about the brand, but just like we were bringing BotCon back in a bigger way. We were communicating as a company in a much more cohesive way. You know, we were having good interaction with fans about the collector figures, about the line. You know, so things were happening that were good. Yeah, I don't know where I want to go after that. The what?
Never mind. Eastern.
Boston. Oh, yeah, but the shows were written in Japan, and they were written by Japanese writers. We sat around and planned what characters would make an appearance and who that they had to be a big deal or a little bit of a deal, just to get the marketing airtime, right? But it was always tough to, as my understanding goes, the style of Japanese animation, the director's king, and some directors, you know, could surf better than others as far as working between Takara and Japanese world and Hasbro global needs and making that all work. And that made for weird stories sometimes. And I don't know if it would have been a tough task. I look back at all this. I don't know how a Japanese writer could have satisfied the American, you know, marketing need. And it would have been an unfair thing unless we rewrote the whole show and we just didn't have budget to do that. We looked into that at one point, but
I remember I don't remember the specific episode name, but I was watching a couple episodes here recently, and Scourge, the dragon, transformer from the Beast Planet or Giant Planet. I can't remember.
It's Beast Planet.
Yeah. From the Beast Planet. One of the kids befriended him, and it wound up with Optimus Prime and a whole bunch of the Autobots discovering him having a sit down powwow with these kids, and they were teaching him morality. And I just, by the end of the episode, I'm sitting there going,
yeah,
but it was hilarious, yeah. In the Japanese version, like, you watch it and you go like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. It's your classic villain turns good because he's not actually evil.
Yeah, I mean, they always sort of painted him as he was basically just doing what he had to do for his planet, right? So
He's like Starscream. Think of him as of him as Animal Starscream. he's loyal to his like in the sense to his planet. You know, he's got a lot of honor, a bit misplaced as it is, but you know.
He's basically the template for Predaking and Transformers Prime.
Yeah.
Now we.
But he would rather eat the kids. Predaking would rather eat the kids, though.
Now, we've kind of skirted around it. Now, Unicron kind of had a big part in Armada, and I guess so much so in Energon, but. The reason that it's called the Unicron Trilogy is, I guess, all three were tied together. Now, what kind of flow did you start out saying, okay, there's going to be the next three Transformer lines are going to be tied together? Okay.
No. Again, it was tough to anticipate 18 months would work out, let alone 18 months, and plan, you know, that far out. There's nobody would do that. Unicron initially came up in that back end of Armada planning for the show, and that would have been Hasbro's second Christmas with the product line. Needed the big item. Everybody was like, what should we do? And me and a few other guys within Takara really liked the Neo Beast Wars Neo Unicron.
Oh, that thing was beautiful.
Yeah. I love that model. I saw the pictures. I had pictures for a long time on my desk, real pictures, photographs. And we kind of, when that opportunity came up, hey, we need a big Transformer, you know, something really impressive for the back end of this show. Unicron was really the only guy that ever came up, and that's how he came to be. And that worked out great, you know, finally kind of made that guy work in the show. Brought him back for a whole new generation who had never known him the other way. And Energon, yeah, I think he's largely gone. And then Cyber...
He's mostly dead through Energon.
Yeah.
No, he appears in... So he's just a head.
Yeah.
There's some backstory that explains that. And then he gets defeated by Convoy with Omega Supreme. And then he kind of becomes just a glowing little globe that creates a whole nother universe, which was really confusing.
Yeah.
Like, so, I'm not joking. That Super Link should have been 26 episodes.
And so... That last series, then we had to wrap it up somehow and needed that kind of ticking clock. What could be so bad? Well, when he died, he created a vacuum in space that everybody's going to fall into if you don't fix it. And the only way to fix it is to go off into these planets and find these lost artifacts. That's kind of how he remained in that third series.
Now, I have to say, as a fan, not just of the Generation 1 series, but of the toy design, whenever we as fans started seeing the design or seeing pictures of Armada Unicron first come out, I think BotCon, I believe, is whenever it was first revealed.
Probably.
Whenever he first started hitting store shelves, there was a rumor. I had heard from another fan that lived here in Kentucky, where I live, that had found him at a Walmart in Lexington. And that prompted me to go out at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I traveled almost 200 miles and hit 7 Walmarts looking for that toy, and I did find it. But I was so excited for that toy. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I went looking for him, and that was just that's my little nerd story for the night. Tobias, we haven't heard from you in a while. I apologize. What do you have any questions or comments?
No, I was waiting actually for segmenting into the toy section of a Cybertron, because I think there are some really, really great toys there. One of my favorites is Vector Prime. Really? I really like that toy, the design of it.
Yeah, that was one on in that, you know, you spend different amounts of time on every character. Some go by really fast, things that are just cars and jets. That guy, we spent a lot of time on him with some pre-production art to get that look down, that kind of a new look. And I think the transformation of the figure's a little clunky. You know, that front nose is a bit much, but the character is very cool, and I am proud of that design, and that he stands out. You know,
yeah,
again, you're going to hear me talk about the things that stand out. You know, there's always going to be a red sports car. There's always going to be, you know, an airplane of some sort. You know, it's the weirder, unique things that make, you know, that I remember and enjoy.
Yeah, so far there's only one
really good character design.
So far, there's only one Clockwork spaceship.
Yeah, team. Right.
Well, the overall design was not just beautiful, but the intricate. At that time, and even today, we still don't get figures that has as much molded in detail as Vector Prime.
I can't think of anything, actually, to tell the truth.
Different times, I was able to spend more time to get a vision through than maybe they need now or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, when I did a reorganizing of my collection a few years back that I think every adult collector goes through when they decide that they need to focus down. And so I got rid of a lot of my Unicron trilogy stuff, but man, I could not part with this thing. This thing was amazing, and I had to keep it on. For the audio listeners, this is Cybertron Optimus Prime or Galaxy Force Convoy. This thing is just a stunning toy. It's just absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, that's 1,000% Eric's Ebenhaler, man. And it shows. That's a cool toy.
It still fetches that toy out of Cybertron fetches a really, really good price on the secondhand market. I've in one of my sell offs a number of years back, I sold mine, and here in the last year or so, I've kind of, you know, I got to thinking, hey, I'd like to go back and get that mold because it was really, really fun and really interesting and, in my personal opinion, is one of the most gorgeous prime molds in Transformers history.
It's got a great silhouette.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a very Power Master Optimus Prime-ish silhouette, or Gajin Rai, I guess, silhouette. But I rank it up there with the Laser Prime, G2 Laser Prime, and the and G1 Prime, of course. It's right up there. RID Prime. It's really, really gorgeous figure. We can kind of wind down our discussion of the Unicron trilogy. Exiting the Unicron trilogy, what were your thoughts as a company and yours personally looking back on those, and what would you have like to have done differently?
They were good. It was kind of, I'm glad it happened for me when it happened, you know, not so many eyeballs and oversight. And it was a lot more here, make something of this kind of attitude. You know, Transformers kind of comes and goes a little bit at times. So they're trying not to have that happen now. So I was fortunate to kind of be in that front end rebuilding process. So it was fun to see how that stuff survives. It's great to see it in the Generations line now, that Starscream you keep pulling out. That stuff has added to the lore that I borrowed from, you know, from when I started from the G1 stuff. So that's nice. Nice to have left, some contributions beyond just the plastic products. People like these characters. which is more important than anything. You know, and ultimately those things that we all did and all that stuff that worked out, you know, paved the way again for the movies and all the stuff that's happening. So, you know, I'm just proud of the work and the working with great people. You know, fun experience.
Now, going out of the Unicron trilogy, what came after that? Was it animated that came after that? Yes.
I guess technically it was the movie. Because yeah. It was
so
classics.
Yeah.
Now, do you attribute the the onset of the movies? How much did Hasbro attribute the popularity of the Unicron trilogy into springboarding into the 2007 live action movie?
You know, I'll say it like this. I don't think a cartoon that's aired at 6 a.m. on Cartoon Network is going to propel too many movies, which a lot of the animated Transformers stuff was, the Unicron and animated Armada. But it definitely continued to build awareness, continued to allow us to hone what it is that's special about Transformers. Both the storyline, the characters, and the products, and why people respond to the products over those years, cultivating, you know, a relationship with the fans at BotCon and Comic Cons and things. That all of that paved the way for just future successes down the road, which were the movies and the other series and studios and games and everything.
Insanely popular IDW comics.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't take a claim to any of that. I want to be clear about that. But it just, all of us that worked on that stuff, it definitely paved the way for what's, you know, where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to segue into the toys again. I just... I remember something I forgot to ask you, and there was one great Energon toy, really. There was really two, Sharkticon and Scorponok.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about these two.
Because not Slug Slinger?
They're still great toys.
Oh, yes. I do have Slug Slinger.
Slug Slinger was awesome.
Sorry.
I forgot that late, early on. So, sorry.
So...
Sorry, what was the question?
Was there a question there?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could tell something about, let's say, Scorponok. Were you involved in the design?
Yeah, I was involved in that design. I ended up doing a lot of the villains, and Eric would do the heroes. I like to draw pointy chins, and he does square jaws.
So okay.
We kind of divided the line that way. More so in Energon that way, and by Cybertron, he was really carrying a lot of it, and I kind of came in and did Megatron, stuff like that. He did a lot of Megatron, too. But anyway, I digress. Sharkticon came about, I think, just, again, we had a little more freedom, you know, so a spaceship kind of character wasn't so scary at the time, you know. I don't know if they'd make one of those now. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we were just having fun with it. We were looking through the archives, you know, that don't have it here. Sorry, the G1 kind of recollection book had just come out, you know, so we always were looking through that and going, what old characters from the G1 series can we bring back or color characters like? So that's how Slug Slinger. Sharkticon, Scorponok all got in there. I had a lot of fun with Scorponok, just trying to bring a lot of different type of action to that one item.
Yeah, great toys, great characters.
Thank you.
Speaking of Scorponok, what are your thoughts on the recent BotCon remold, making that very Scorponok mold an actual headmaster? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I thought that was cool. I thought that was real cool. You know, because it was kind of like a homage off the homage that made it more like, you know, it brought it back home, you know, which was, I thought it was fun.
It was insane. I mean, I don't have one, but I wish I did, because I mean I'm a huge Headmaster fan myself, so it would be amazing to be able, like the Slug Slinger, you know, Master Shooter Collectibles has put out some basically an add-on kit to give Slug Slinger a Target Master, and that actually is, you know, I totally forgot, you know, until Tobias brought him up, was one of the few Energon toys that I even have now still. I mean, it's just so visually interesting, and he's complicated as crap for an Energon toy, but he's awesome.
I think it was brought up that the Decepticons are probably the more enjoyable toy modes in Energon Superlink. And I have to admit, because I bought only the Japanese toys, Slug Slinger and Shacticon were probably the only two American things I actually bought from the Energon line. And only because they were so interesting. They were such good designs, the colors, everything. It just suited so well. And it felt it was like a massive shame they didn't turn up in the show in some form.
Yeah, yeah. The closest I ever got was that there was an IDW summer special that had like the Predaking on the cover. Anyway, it wasn't IDW, it was Dreamwave, sorry.
Wait, Omega Supreme, right? Is that the one?
I swear they called it a summer special. And it had a bunch of different stories, and there's a little vignette story about those characters in it that me and Simon Furman worked up. So that's about the only content those guys have.
Now, I guess to wind this down, you said at the beginning that going into Armada, the awareness of the collector fan base wasn't as you weren't as aware of it back then. But I'm sure by the end of Cybertron is whenever, because right after Cybertron is around the time that we started getting the Classics line and everything.
Well, my first BotCon was the debut of Armada, so we started hearing early from the fans.
So and it's obvious through like Energon, Scorponok, and everything. You started going back into the archives and looking at some of the original characters and giving them homages. In the line, how much of a voice did the fans carry back then as compared to now? What do you see as far as the fandom goes?
I always say that, you know, fandom is a good barometer of what you're doing well and what you're not doing well, and it's also a good opportunity to kind of gauge interest. You know, so we didn't know, like early on, we didn't know what mattered. You know, that's weird to say, but you know, some fans will tell you transformation matters, kibble sucks. Some will tell you, I want extra parts, guns. Some people like gimmicks. Some people want only the characters they know and the vehicle form they know. You know, then you got the die cast and rubber wheel people. You know, so it was always just an opportunity to intake information. I guess that's how I would say the interaction with the fans and what we learned and experienced with the fans, how we used it, because it came from every side. So you really had to just use it as a kind of voting districts or something. You know, we would just discuss things. I don't know if that answered your question. But.
Yeah, I think it's a good insight because not a lot of fans are able to get to the conventions and hear and see the panels. You know, I've sat in on many Hasbro panels at BotCon, and you know, that's one of the things that we try to do here at TFYLP is bring almost a BotCon panel type atmosphere to where if people want to know something or hear something from the horse's mouth, I guess is the old adage, you know, it's like you know, your opinions and your insights on these things. So it's always valuable.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, the fans have always been very fair to me. You know, I'm smart enough to know not everything I'm going to do is going to make everybody happy. and that gets me through life without a lot of stress. But, you know, the communication with the fans has been wonderful. I got some great friends out of it. You know, so I feel like I was always treated pretty fairly given how contentious a lot of what we did could be. You know, there's a lot of other industries who have a lot worse situations with
Star
their
Wars. I guess I'll open it up to Tobias and Michael and Hang for any closing comments and questions that they may have.
Yeah. Well, I can start out. I know that Play With This 2 are going to start their Kickstarter campaign in about 2 weeks. Is that right?
Yep. February 27th. I don't know the time of day, but February 27th.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah,
some contribution from Sweden.
It's going to be exciting, you know. It's cool new way to collect the type of figures we all used to collect, and you know, hopefully Rick can make a go of it, and you know, provide a lot of fun new characters to put with your other ones.
Yeah, play with this. I really like this concept with the interchangeable parts and all that. So it's,
yeah, and the heads. I think the heads are going to be a lot of fun for people if you're into that. If you're into customizing and army building and stuff, the heads are going to be a lot of fun.
I kind of told Rick I have this insane idea in my head. It's kind of it goes along the lines with what Play With This 2 is doing. I have this insane idea in my head that I think would just totally work. And he's like, well, you know, draw it out for me and put it. I'm like, I haven't drawn in like 15 years. It would look like a kindergarten drawing, but I mean, just getting to sit down and draw something out. I want to submit it so badly. But just finding the time to actually do it justice. I mean, I think that's one of the things that excites me so much about Play With This too is not just you know, things that takes design cues from Transformers, but you know, there's G.I. Joe and Masters of the Universe you know, concerts.
It's like we tried to crawl in the heads of the designers of the 80s.
Yes.
And kind of regurgitate modern aesthetic designs with that sensibility. You know, it's different. It's different. I mean,
well, and the character that's hanging behind your head right now, Cthulhu. I mean,
And I like what you're doing with some of those heads that you teased about, especially that the Easter Island head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what's fun about it. You know, if we've all collected figures for a long time and, you know, it's cool to have the stuffy, everybody's a badass setup, but having some funny heads like that Easter Island guy or the unicorn or some of that, that's fun. We should have a little more fun with this hobby.
Absolutely.
As well.
It's all about the toys too. I mean, that's the key. I mean, making something fun, even for the adults, you know, I mean, a lot of these obviously are aimed at the adults, but, my God, I mean, just to sit there and the insane combination abilities. I mean, take the head off of this one and the torso off of this one and make your own character. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully it jump starts right out of the gate and, you know, he can not have a heart attack, you know, waiting.
How about you, Michael? Do you have comments, questions? I mean, I guess out of all of us here, you and Hing are probably the most centric of the demographic that the Unicron trilogy was on. I mean, I guess you would have the most insight, I guess, as to what they were trying to do back then.
Mike?
You want to
go first?
I left him speechless.
Yeah, I don't know. I lost any train of thought that I did have. I was actually curious to kind of pick your brain for a moment about, like, because we failed to mention them, the Energon combiners. Superion Maximus, Constructicon Maximus, and Bruticus Maximus.
Yeah.
And those, that design system, while flawed at the time, yeah, has sort of permeated over the last, you know, decade now, yeah, into what is now Combiner Wars. When you guys were designing those, did you, I guess, you know, just a little bit of insight into the design process of those?
Yeah, the like all combiners, they're all the same. What's the link system, and then how can you get the best three forms really out of a character, robot, vehicle, and limb? And Takara was always trying new systems. That one, you know, had the whole Energon crystal gear stuff that had to also be used. It's a flawed system, but yeah, I think Takara, and I know Eric, because he did Power Core combiners also. You know, you keep needling at it and keep trying to figure it out. Combiners aren't going to ever leave Transformers, so you might as well keep trying to find new ways to present it. And yeah, I think that's, you know, ultimately, you know, continues on, like you said, to Combiner Wars, what they're doing today, which I actually haven't seen a lot of. So I don't know as much about it than maybe you guys do, but
we've got almost a full.
It's something you always look out for.
Combiner. They definitely sort of taken that Energon design and you know, perfected it, but it definitely still has that Energon design there that, you know, it's very sort of stuck with the brand through Power Core combiners, like you said, and then now.
Yeah. I wish
Power Core would have done better.
You know, the designs of
those are really unique.
If the drones had been more like mini-cons with that could become hands and arms and feet, I mean, if they'd had robot modes, they would have been perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I personally think Power Core was great as it is. Having to go into like the vehicles going into arms and legs and then robots at that size would have been hellish, I'd like to say.
Yeah. I think the only thing that did that line in was the spring loaded gimmick. Yeah. If they would have just turned into arms and legs without the springs, because some of mine, the springs started to weaken and they stopped transforming correctly or stopped standing up. But I had a lot of fun with those. It was actually, I asked because, you know, I've sort of been sticking with the combiners since Energon, and it's finally starting to pay off big. Yeah.
I mean, they've been at it. It's been, you know, after Energon, obviously for a while, we let it slough, you know, kind of sit off to the side.
I'm just glad they didn't throw it away.
Yeah.
Hang, how about your closing comments and questions?
Well, I guess I have to ask. So obviously Armada started off trying to introduce the Minicons into the Transformers universe. But by the time we hit Energon and Cybertron, they're kind of just faded away. You kind of still have them as characters in the background, but they're not as integral to the storyline anymore. Was that a conscious thought? Like the Minicons weren't doing popular enough that you felt that you could phase them out in the second and third?
No, I think it's hard for me to remember everything exactly, but my memory of it was that Takara did not connect the shows. So Hasbro paid for kind of a bumper ending to the Cybertron series that would bring back all the kids and Kicker from Energon and Armada and have that kind of goodbye moment. That wasn't part of the Japanese side of that. So they, you know, we wanted toys promoted in the show, and if they didn't want to promote last year's toys, which Minicons were kind of like the old idea, it got written out of the show a little bit, and that's kind of what happened. I'm not putting that on them exactly, but just through the process, there wasn't enough support to get into the show in a big way or continuing in the product line. However, the idea of Minicons now is here to stay, and they're part of the kind of society, one of the society groups within the transforming robot kind of worlds. So in a way, you know, they've remained. They're the winner out of Armada.
Before,
did I give you a good answer on that? Is that?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like,
right.
I mean, Master Pons.
Go ahead.
So, like, don't get me wrong. I love Minicons.
Yeah.
But I just felt that by the time we hit Energon and Cybertron, it just been kind of pushed to the back. Yeah, but you know, you don't really need them.
Yeah. We tried to keep like the pins and posts on the products here and there. They didn't activate anything, but you know, they would show up from time to time.
Transformers jewelry.
Yeah. outfit yourself, drape yourself with a lot of, you know, tanks
for the memories.
Can we have a bot, like Mr. T as a robot, and then on the Minicons as his chains?
Yeah,
that would be great.
Well, there was actually another generation's set of Minicons that combined together that was just recently released, the Minicon Assault Team.
Yeah,
it was pretty neat.
Well, and Minicons are part of the new series as well.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's
are my they?
Yeah, there's that yes. Little weird head guy.
Yeah, supposedly there's supposed to be a gimmick later on that actually has figures that sort of spring deploy their Minicons off of them, like they attach to them as weapons and then spring off of them. I don't know if they transform or something like that, but it's supposed to be a gimmick that's coming later on with the line. So the Minicons have definitely made their stay. Yeah. I mean, they hit that little collectible market, like you had said, that was the original intention. I mean, there's some collectors out there who are hunting down super rare Minicons that are hundreds of dollars because they have to complete their Minicon collection.
I believe there's one of the members of the cast, if I'm not mistaken. It might be Jim Black. I don't know if it's him or someone else that's got a huge Minicon collection, and they've got to catch them all, you know. So, I mean, it's like they've got to have them all. I do want to state, though, for you listeners that are wondering what happened to Headmaster Don, he had some connection issues, and he was trying to get back in, but the link wasn't letting him back into the hangout. So we apologize to Don and listeners that was waiting on some comments from him.
Now that he can't defend himself.
Yeah, yeah. and I know he asked me a question, and same Galvatron, Greg Metcalf, one of the founders of this show. I don't know if you recall back at your very first BotCon, whenever you was first announced and everything, and everybody was, you know, giving you the applause. And then there was a brief break and someone screamed out, "We love you, Aaron." That was him.
I always like to know where to point the restraining orders.
Yeah. But yeah, it was him. He asked me the other day. He said, "I wonder if he still remembers that moment." It was kind of awkward. It's like there was a brief pause, and then he's the only one that screamed out, "We love you, Aaron!" And everybody's like looked at him like, "What's going on here?" But do you remember that at all?
I don't want to sound off on this, but that wasn't the only time that's happened, so I don't know. I might not be able to distinguish him from.
Yeah. Well, I believe it was the very first BotCon that you ever attended to, or well, it might have been OTFCC, the last right before FunPub actually took over. So
my first one was Fort Wayne, 2002.
Okay. No,
maybe 2003. Yeah, 2003.
I was thinking he was thinking Chicago in 2004, I believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, I believe that'll wrap us up tonight. I do want to have a programming note for TFYLP listeners. We're going to try to have some Toy Fair coverage this weekend. I myself and Insane Galvatron, we're going to be guests of the Radio Free Cybertron podcast tomorrow. So those of you who listen to that podcast, I'll be on there with Brian Kilby and crew, and we'll be eagerly looking for the newest toys that are announced from the Hasbro booth, and also looking for the Play With This too. Aaron, I do want to thank you for joining us again. You know, it was a pleasure having you at TFCon USA this year, and absolute pleasure having you on again this evening. I know we kept you over, but I do want to thank you for joining us.
No, I had a great time. I always kind of close with this. I've told you my side of the story. There's a whole other side at Takara, Tomy, equally worth hearing. I can't speak for them, but when I do talk on behalf of Transformers, it, you know, it is an army of people, and well, you know, because I don't talk about them, I don't want people to think that I'm dismissing or leaving them out of the story. It's just very complex to tell their side of the story, but they are that, you know, none of this was done in a vacuum. I'm not the only person that should be talking about such a, you know, layered things, but seek them out.
That's actually one of my dreams, to have some of the people that worked on the lines and worked on the toys in Japan on the show. I don't know if there would be much of a language barrier there. I mean, I'm assuming they speak English well enough to be on the show with.
We always found a way to communicate. A show might be tough, but
well, we do have somebody that can speak Japanese on the show here. Yeah. So.
But I love talking about this stuff. You know, to that end, you know, we had a great time making those series and things, and it was a more fun, pure time. So it was nice talking about it. Appreciate the interest.
We truly appreciate having you on, and I want to thank Tobias, Michael, Hank, having you guys on. And I mean, we've covered pretty much around the world with Aaron Archer tonight about the Unicron trilogy. Again, join us this weekend. We're going to try, even if it's not a broadcast, we're going to try to do some stuff on Facebook and everything, I'm sure. And of course, myself and Insane Galvatron on Radio Free Cybertron this weekend. And thank you, Aaron, for joining us. We'll mute our mics and I'll play the outro. And
thanks,
we'll see
guys.
You next time on Transformers for your listening pleasure.
Yeah.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.